We tend to think of samsara as a place, but it's actually something we do. Literally, it means the wandering on. Although, as we said this evening, it could mean the bumbling on. People running blindly around, going wherever their desires take them. And then reading the fine print afterwards. And then trying a new desire, and then another one, and another one, keeping at it. And so when we think that the path away from samsaring is long, just keep remembering samsara is extremely long. And it doesn't necessarily come to an end. We have to decide that we've had enough and we want to pull out. And it may require work and it requires patience. We want to get out right away. It's like one of those prison break movies, where they have to have a very elaborate plan, and all the little pieces of the plan have to be put together. And if they get impatient, they ruin their chances. You've got to be very, very patient as you practice, which means you need something to sustain you. When the Buddha describes the stages of focusing on the mind as you meditate, the first thing you have to do once you learn how to observe your mind is to try to gladden it. Now, you don't wait until you've been meditating to gladden it. You try to gladden it first by the way you live your daily life, being generous, being virtuous. This is one of the reasons why when the Buddha introduced the Four Noble Truths to people, he would start out with these two topics, taking joy and being generous, taking joy and being virtuous. Or if he was discussing the basis for the acts of merit, acts of goodness. There was generosity, virtue, and also the development of goodwill. Learning how to take joy in the fact that you can have goodwill for everybody, because you're aiming at a happiness that's not going to harm anybody, doesn't require anybody to be oppressed. You're walking lightly in the world. Take joy in that. Then as you sit down to meditate, you can reflect on that. Because you're going to be observing the mind. And the mind is easiest to observe when it's been doing good things, acting on good intentions, trying to develop skillful intentions. In other words, intentions that are not only good, but also lead to good results. If you've been leading a life where you've been harming other people, it's hard to look at the mind. I was leading a retreat one time. And one afternoon, the person in the retreat just started breaking down crying. I was new to leading retreats and noticed nobody else seemed to be responding at all. Found out later that this particular person had been a drug dealer, and it suddenly hit him, all the people's lives that he had ruined in his drug dealing. That kind of mind is hard to watch. So you learn to take delight in doing good, being generous, helping other people who are generous. Being with admirable friends, people who are people of conviction, virtue, generosity, discernment. These things lift not only the mind, but they lift the heart. Remember, we're training both the heart and the mind. In Pali, the word citta covers both. So it's not just a technique for juggling concepts. You're trying to develop good qualities in the heart. And the good qualities make it easier to gain insight into the workings of the mind. So when you're trying to sit and meditate, you can reflect on your virtue, you can reflect on your generosity in the past. This is one way of lifting your spirits. Or the Buddha recommends that you reflect on the fact that you've been developing the qualities that make a person a deva. Again, it's the qualities of an admirable friend, conviction, virtue, generosity, discernment. And then you add learning the Dhamma. And here is where it's good to learn how to take delight in what you're doing. As you get the mind to settle down, see it as a challenge. See it as a puzzle, an intriguing puzzle that you're trying to figure out. Why is it the mind wants a sense of pleasure, but then when it gets pleasure, it gets impatient? What is that boredom that gets so overwhelming at times? What do you do with that so you don't give into it, so you don't identify with it? When you learn how not to identify with your thoughts, you've learned an important skill. Because it's in identifying with our craving that we just get pulled on and on and on into this bumbling on. So you get the mind something good to focus on, like the breath. You can work with the breath. You can do all kinds of things with the breath. Think of the breath coming in the base of the spine, going up the spine, coming in the soles of the feet, coming in the palms of the hands, coming in through the eyes and ears. Learn how to play with your sensation of the body. Learn how to play with your perceptions about the breath. That's one way of making meditation entertaining. The Buddha actually lists 6 ways of delighting that help you along the path. The first, of course, is to delight in the Dharma, that there is a teaching that points out the true way. This is the way to gain total freedom, total liberation, so we're no longer bumbling on. And that teaching is alive in the world. So learn how to delight in that fact. And then the Buddha says you learn how to delight in abandoning and delight in developing. Now that you delight in abandoning your greed, your lust, your aversion, you see it as a victory in the mind when you're able to pull yourself out of these things. As for delight in developing, of course, that means delight in developing skillful qualities. It's like mindfulness, alertness, based on goodwill, compassion, empathetic joy, equanimity. There are lots of good qualities you can develop in the mind. Then the Buddha says you try to delight in seclusion, finding the fact that you're not being bombarded all the time by other people's opinions, other people's issues. They can have time for yourself to get to really know yourself. Learn how to delight in that opportunity when it comes. And then finally, learn how to delight in 2 aspects of the goal. Of course, you really delight in the goal when you got there, but it's anticipating, one, that there's a goal where it's non-afflictive. You're not afflicting anybody. You're not afflicting yourself. You're not afflicting anybody else with the happiness you found. Because there's so many ways we gain our living in the world, so many ways that we look for happiness that aren't going to be a burden on other people. I mean, simply the fact that we have this human body means that we have to have food, clothing, shelter, medicine. And a lot of people are put to a lot of trouble to provide all those things. But when we attain the goal, we're totally free from that. This is one of the reasons why we have that contemplation of the requisites every day. To remind ourselves that we're born here with a big gaping hole. This body that has so many needs. And we keep coming back. When we can't stay in this body, we try to find another one, then another one. And it's remembering that there are lots of karmic debts that go along with that. And you're placing a burden on a lot of people. So you can delight in the fact that the goal, when it comes, is not a burden on anybody. It has no requisites at that point. And then finally, the other aspect of nirvana that the Buddha has you delight in is the fact. He calls it non-objectification. It's a technical term, the Pali term papancha. Sometimes it's translated as proliferating thoughts. But the Buddha doesn't talk about it in terms of how many thoughts there are. There are thoughts that are based around the perception, I am the thinker. And when you have a thinker, then you're a being, and a being needs to feed. And as beings feed, they get into conflict. And that's the point that the Buddha is aiming at when he talks about this concept. As always, it leads to conflict. Whereas in Nibbana, there's no conflict at all. There's no conflict inside you. There's no conflict between you and other people. It's total peace, total harmony. So you learn how to delight in the way and to delight in the goal. Because if you don't delight in these things, you're going to delight in their opposites. There are people who would delight if the Dharma were not here. In fact, you look at so many Dharma teachers nowadays. They seem like they hate the Dharma. They keep wanting to change it. They don't want there to be a true Dharma. They want there to be, well, it was just somebody's opinion and this, or the opinions of the Buddha back then, but that back then is different from now and we need something different. They delight in that. And it pulls them off the path. Or people delight in developing their cravings, and they delight in abandoning any sense of shame, any sense of compunction. In other words, they delight in all the wrong things. They delight in being around a lot of people. They delight in getting engaged in conflict, getting engaged in things that oppress other people. These are the things that keep us in the bumbling on, and then the worst part of the bumbling on. So when the path seems long, remember there's a lot to delight in as you're following the path. You're on a good path. And even though you haven't gotten to the point where you're totally free from placing a burden on others and you're not totally in a place of non-conflict, you're heading in that direction. And you can see that the mind gets more and more at peace. It gets more reliable. You can depend on yourself not to do unskillful things. And as you get better and better at this, even in really difficult circumstances, you can avoid doing something unskillful. That's when you feel really safe. That's the main safety in life, when you know that you're not going to do anything harmful. Which means, of course, that the one danger you want to watch out for are the tendencies the mind still has, where it could do something harmful to others, could do something unskillful. But you delight in the fact that it's a path that shows you how to overcome those tendencies. So learn how to delight in the Dharma, delight in the path. So instead of bumbling on, you get really masterful at following the path. It is a skill to be developed, and it's a good skill. It may demand a lot, and may demand a lot of patience. But in those prison break movies, when you finally get out, you'll be glad that you took all those pains, that you were that careful, you were that heedful. So learn how to be glad that you're on this path. As you're glad in the mind, keeps you going. It also helps develop your powers of concentration. As the next step of the Buddha says, when you work on gladding the mind, the next step is to concentrate the mind. And the mind is a lot easier to concentrate when it's been gladdened by good things. And when it's concentrated, then it can begin to release itself from the things that have been burdening it, things that have been holding it down, restricting it. Because when the mind is concentrated, you can see what's going on. You can learn how to say no to things that you realize have been causing unnecessary stress, unnecessary trouble. It's in this way that we develop both heart and mind at the same time. We liberate both the heart and the mind. That's what it's all about. When the Buddha was on his last trip, as he wandered around the last year of his life, that was one of the themes he kept talking about again and again. Noble virtue, noble concentration, noble discernment, noble release. It's the release that makes all these other things noble. And always keep in mind that it is a possibility, no matter how long the path may seem. The fact that there is a path leading to release is so much better than the world that too many people live in which they don't see that there's a path to release at all. So it doesn't matter how long it is. Learn how to delight in the path that goes there. And that's how you arrive.